So as Brian mentioned, Hope Restored is a fairly new organization in Saskatoon. So we have been around since 2015. And really, we were started by a group of people from all across our province who were saying, okay, something needs to change. We are seeing that the issue of sexual exploitation and trafficking is happening within our cities, within our towns, all through on our highways, truck stops. But there's nothing that's happening to actually work with the people who are experiencing this. And so it started from a group of volunteers, myself being one of them, who were really concerned and wanted to see some change within this reality and wanted to be able to actually see how can we move people forward and give them opportunity to even get out of this if they are desiring to get out. And so in 2015, we did tons of research, learning about what exists out there, what's good practice, how can we move forward? And then in 2017, incorporated as Hope Restored Canada officially and as a charity here in Saskatoon and moving forward, just, okay, how do we do this? What are the programs that need to be in place? How can we connect with individuals? And I think one of the most interesting and most enlightening things for myself is just to see how there is really this connection when we look, especially in Saskatchewan, with sex trafficking and exploitation and missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, kind of the history that all of Canada, but also Saskatchewan has been on, and how that reality still really plays out today and how there's such extreme vulnerabilities for our Indigenous peoples within Saskatchewan. And so we have really seen that come together and have a large number of people in our program or that we have reached out to through outreach services that would come from that background or population. And so part of my journey, so switching a little bit from the organization to Jolene as her own personal self, I used to be a camp director. I worked at Redberry Bible Camp. Lots of you may actually know it or attended there or worked there in the past. And it was when I was working at camp that I began to learn about what was happening in Saskatoon. And I started attending education sessions and learning a little bit more about this. And what became very alarming for me, I remember very specifically sitting in this session and this lady was talking about the issue of child exploitation, actually. And she was talking about how this played out and what she was seeing in Saskatoon. And it was more from an education research standpoint. They weren't necessarily doing anything specific other than maybe informing police and that of what they were doing. And what she said was actually that Avenue W was a strip for where this would happen. There was lots of activity that would happen on this. And in that moment, I remember sitting in this room and my world became so small. I actually grew up right off of Avenue W on 29th Street. I went to what you could call an inner city elementary school and high school. And as she was sharing all of this, it was like my life flashed before my eyes and I saw the kids that I went to school with and their parents that I grew up with and people that were just in my life through living in that area. And I began to realize, oh my gosh, all of those times that I was confused and unsure and felt unsettled about what was maybe happening in my friends' lives or with their parents, holy man, this is what was happening. And something that seemed so far away became so close to me. And it was at that point that I really began to think, okay, maybe there's something more to this and I need to kind of press into this issue a little bit more. And so that's when I continued to walk down the road of learning more about this issue. And from that point on, really starting to actually meet others who were engaged in sex work and had been experiencing that for a big part of their life, and really felt a little bit unsure. What do I do in the midst of this? I am somebody who, you know, doesn't necessarily have education that's going to be able to reach out and help them. But I know that I'm feeling inspired and feeling like, okay, I need to do something about this. And so as I started kind of journeying down this road, something very interesting happened. I began to, you know, I would pray for people and I would pray for this issue and start to engage in that way. And I started actually having nightmares. And at this point, it was something where I would talk with my friends and say, okay, maybe this is not something that I need to pursue further. This is kind of almost scaring me. And in that process, I just really felt this like constant call to just keep being consistent, keep showing up, keep learning about this, keep steady on that journey. Continuing to pursue this, even though I was really unsure about, just with all of these nightmares and things that were coming up. And I think the thing that was very interesting for me is I needed to walk through that journey and I needed to be able to confront some of those fears so that I would be able to have freedom in the work that I do now. And that was something that I didn't realize at the time was how important that would be. Something that I think almost everybody asks me and asks others who are a part of this is how dangerous is this work? And I can honestly say that I have never felt endangered in anything that I have ever done in working with individuals who have experienced this. I've never felt threats or fear or anxiety about any of the situations that I find myself in. And I really do contribute that to working through some of these things before entering into it and allowing even the Lord to just heal certain parts of my heart so that as I walk into this, I'm fully free and ready to embrace what is to come. And so I don't know why, but as I was preparing for this today, I just really felt like I needed to share that piece with you. And I don't know if it's an encouragement to someone here who is feeling as though maybe they're being invited into something that is uncomfortable or they're unsure about, or feeling a little bit like, oh man, I don't know if I can do that. But I just want to share my experience of really being willing to confront some of those things and to be met with peace and to be met with comfort and even healing in the midst of those things as I move forward and spent time in prayer and spent time with the Lord on those things. And so my encouragement to you is even if it feels scary or you feel unsure about it, it might be the best place for you and you should walk forward in that. And so, yeah, in that whole process, one other thing happened, and I was actually sitting, so I'm sure some of you guys know the Underground Cafe that's on 20th Street, and I was sitting there, and it was beautiful outside. It was before summertime, and so it was really, really nice out, and I was sitting there, and this lady came and sat at a table, and this was before I was involved with Hope Restored, when I was kind of starting to discern and think through, okay, where could this passion for actually wanting to help go? So I'm sitting at this cafe and this lady sits down and she is absolutely distraught. She is beside herself. And as I'm sitting there, I think I'm supposed to go talk to her. I just feel this nudging that I'm supposed to go and talk to this lady. And so I'm thinking, absolutely not. I have no idea what to say. What am I going to do? She's very upset. I don't know her. And so eventually, after wrestling with this nudging, I get up and I go and I sit down beside her. And I just sat there for a little bit. And then eventually I just said, hi, my name's Jolene. I just noticed that, you know, you're not doing well. Is there anything you want to talk about? Like, I'm here for you if you want. And so this lady opened up and she rattled off all kinds of things. And she obviously had, she had experience with the industry. She had abuse in her past and addictions and all kinds of struggles. And she ended off her long saga of rambling with, I'm just sitting here till I can jump in front of this bus and kill myself. And I thought, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? Why am I sitting in front of this lady? I am not ready for this. And in that moment, I just felt like, okay, we had this conversation and I started talking with her and asking her questions and sitting with her. And she told me all kinds of things about her story. And I was able to share a little bit about, you know, just other things that I'd seen in other people's lives and heard their struggles. And I was able to pray with her in the end. And it was just a very, it was a moment where I realized, wow, maybe I don't have education in all of these things and I'm still learning a lot as I go. But in this moment, I felt so sure that that's where I was supposed to be. And like I showed up as fully present as who I am. and was able to connect with this lady and see a different outcome. And after, I probably sat with her for about 45 minutes. And at the end of that conversation, she said to me, "I haven't felt this light in over 30 years. And just that willingness for me to go and sit with her and to see such change was really telling for me that, okay, I can do this. I can step forward into this unknown of whatever it looks like, which now is Hope Restored Canada, but at the time of this unknown, and be assured that, okay, we can do this. You know, the Lord has prepared me and he has created me in a way that we can move forward and do this. And so that was really assuring for me and a huge, huge stepping stone for me. So after that point, I resigned from Redberry Bible Camp and I met a lady named Jody, who some of you may know. And together we kind of stepped out and started forming what is now Hope Restored today. And so, as I said, there was many people that were involved in that and we were really researching what exists. And Hope Restored has really developed since the beginning. Now I would say we're actually looking at much broader issues. As I said, we're connecting with, you know, what are the realities of how we're seeing our Indigenous peoples being included in this issue or being exploited through this issue? And what are the real like vulnerabilities, but systemic things that are driving what is happening in our society? And how are we seeing this play out? And so really starting to look at the big picture and how we can be a part of contributing to what are some of those solutions and what do we need to do about this? And so I'm going to share a little bit with you about Hope Restored. And I'm going to share my screen again. Hopefully it's okay. And you're able to actually see it. But yeah, so like I said, learning about this and recognizing this is happening here. And one of the things that I just want to mention to everybody is often we think it happens in cities only or in big centers or in places where there's lots of people. But this is something that is happening in every single Saskatchewan town across our province. I remember I was looking, there's places where you can post online and you can see where people are offering services. And I was doing some outreach and looking, and I just thought, hey, I'm going to look at the lake that I go to. And sure enough, there was people working out of even the lake that I go to in the summers. And so this is something that is happening everywhere. It's thriving and it is a serious problem that Canada has. As we have done some research, these are some of the stats. I can just let you read them. But one point that I want to point out is that 42% of women who are controlled by whether it's their pimp, their boyfriend, a manager, somebody that they're working for, a family member who is exploiting them, are recruiting on behalf of that person. And so I want to mention this specifically because in the news over the last number of years, specifically in Saskatoon, we've had some cases where it's come out that, you know, I'll take one for example, there's this young lady who recruited and was exploiting three women within our city. Two were from Quebec and one was from a local town in Saskatchewan. And you know, we look at this and we think, oh man, it's so sad that this lady is trafficking other women. But in reality, when you look at this, and I also know this for fact, just knowing the situation, that person herself is being exploited by somebody else. And she is recruiting for that person who is exploiting her because then she doesn't have to work. She doesn't have to service clients. She just is able to have less of those really exploitative things happen to her if she brings other people into that situation. And so I think that that's something really important that we don't often understand or see, but is important for us to notice. And the other one is often when people who are runaways, kids, especially from the foster care system, leave their homes, leave their shelters, leave the places that they're staying, they are so vulnerable and they are picked up by traffickers or recruiters within 24 to 48 hours. And this is something that, especially as I look at the demographic in Saskatchewan, I've worked in shelters in Saskatchewan with youth in the city here. And I just see this as such a prevalent thing that is happening. And it just really heightens my senses to say, well, what are we doing about that? How are we changing some of these systems so that we can actually see this stat change? Because it's not okay that these youth are being picked up in the midst of that all. On the other side here, it says out of 100 Canadian women who work in prostitution, these are some of the stats. And the one that is just alarming for me is that 91% have been physically assaulted as they've worked in this issue. And so it's just something, it's not a safe place. And lots of women, especially in Saskatchewan, find themselves experiencing this because of outside factors. So it could be like circumstances that exist for them and they don't want to be there. They don't want to be in that situation. And so it's just really a wake up call for us to say, so what are we going to do about it? How are we going to actually step up and say, this enough is enough in the midst of this? I'm not going to spend tons of time going through this, but as I've mentioned, just bringing in the ties to what are those vulnerabilities that exist. And one thing I will say is that we can have a list of vulnerabilities that set people up for being potentially at greater risk to be trafficked. But simply said, being a woman is one of the greatest risk factors for being trafficked, and being from the LGBTQ plus community is also one of the greater risk factors. And so those are two things that just stand out, that if you have those two things, sadly, we are at a greater risk. Something that I think is really helpful for people. So I went to a conference a number of years ago and somebody laid this out for me very well. And so kind of the continuum of how this works. So often when we think of exploitation and trafficking, we think of movies like Taken, or we think of Cambodia, or we think of Thailand, and that's not always how it looks, especially in Saskatchewan. That's not how it always looks. So there's this continuum where there's choice on the one side. So they are actively participating, they've chosen to be there, the exchange of money is seen as consent, and so that could exist. Then there's circumstance in the middle, which I would say is what we see a lot in Saskatchewan. So this is circumstance where people are working because they have addictions issues, they have mental health issues. Maybe they don't have the economic or education status to be able to know how to do things differently. It's familial. So their family did it, their mom, their grandma, people in their family did it. This is the only way that they knew how to make money. And so there's often this tie of poverty or those things that are existing within the circumstance. And this is what we traditionally imagine when we think of prostitution, is people walking up and down the strip, and this is where they fall. And I would say we still have a lot of this in Saskatchewan, and we see this. But the difference here is that if you were to ask any one of these people if they wanted to be there, the resounding answer is absolutely not. They do not want to be working, even though it's the only thing they know, or it was the thing that was modeled to them, or how they were brought up, or how they feed their addiction. They don't want to be there. This is not something that they're doing because they want to. And then the last one is coercion. And this is what we often, our minds go to, like I said, but the most important pieces to remember is that where coercion exists, there's fear, there's force, there's fraud, and there's some type of manipulation that is going on in that situation. And somebody else is gaining benefit off of that person. And so those are the pieces that are really important, and they do not have to be moved from Saskatoon to Regina in order to be coerced or trafficked. They don't have to be moved from one hotel to another. Their entire trafficking experience could be in the same house, and they go from a bathroom to a bedroom, and that is it. And that still is constituted as trafficking, as long as there's fear, force, threat, manipulation, and somebody else is gaining the benefit off that person. And often in these situations, at the bottom, it says $280,000 is the potential annual profit of somebody. And something to note is that that's one person, And more often than not, traffickers have multiple people who are working for them. And so this is a very profitable industry. And I would say 15 years ago, even 20 years ago, we were seeing like drugs, guns, those kinds of things were more at the top of what was being trafficked, what was being run, how that was being done. And then somebody had the twisted but very smart idea, hey, you can only sell drugs once, you can only sell weapons once, but you can sell a person multiple times. And so now the trafficking has really moved from we're seeing a higher percentage of sex trafficking, domestic trafficking, people being used than we were previously when we were seeing drugs and weapons being the main import and export industry. And so, yeah, it's a very, very sobering thought, but it is something that happens every single day in Saskatoon. And 93% of the people in Canada who are being trafficked are our own Canadian citizens. And so to me, that says this is an issue that is ours to own and ours to actually do something about in Canada. And so hence why Hope Restored exists and why we move forward to actually say, okay, how can we do something differently? So in 2017, we started with doing outreach and we were working with different individuals who were actively working in the industry. And in 2019, we actually opened the first and only safe house in Saskatchewan for people who are exiting sexual exploitation and trafficking. So we kind of say either they're exiting and they are actively working and are wanting to get out, or they are vulnerable too. And so that really comes back to that circumstance piece. There are so many people in Saskatchewan, specifically in Canada as a whole, that are trading sex for safety, sex for a place to stay, for food, for shelter, for their drug of choice. And they are very much at risk of being further exploited or trafficked. And so they would be a great fit for our program as well. And so when somebody comes to our house, they kind of go through three different phases. So the first one is just very basic. What does stabilization look like? So it's going to the dentist, going to the doctor, making sure that, you know, they have the medications needed for detoxing, whatever that might be, and just providing basic needs. One of the biggest struggles we have is basically, how do you sleep during the night and you're awake during the day? It seems so basic for you and I, but it is something that really takes some time and some work for individuals. And so the first phase is just really working on those things. The second phase is where the best way I can explain it is that really the inner healing piece that exists for people. And so this is something that makes us unique and different from your traditional like treatment programs or other things that exist out there. We really work through the trauma that they have experienced. So when they come, we work through like self-esteem building, working through some of the things that they experienced during the time or previously. We have a trauma counselor who comes in. She's on site 2 days a week and she does some programming as well as one-on-one sessions. Our program coordinator does one-on-one sessions. And one thing that's really important for us is looking at the holistic piece of healing and trauma. So we definitely are looking at how does trauma sit in our bodies and how do we work through that? So there's the emotional piece, the physical pieces, the mental pieces that we're working through, as well as those spiritual pieces, and really starting to help people understand and learn and broaden. And so for us, one thing that people often ask is, so do you have specific Bible studies and things that you do in program with women? And we do not. We have very intentionally chosen not to incorporate those pieces into programming, because of significant spiritual trauma that often exists for individuals who have been trafficked. And so a common story thread that I have heard is that somebody would have been trafficked for X amount of years and their trafficker took them to church every single Sunday. They had to sit in that pew and they had to make it look like their life was fine and okay. And so that trauma that exists within just that simple interaction is so great. And so we don't want to compound that or put that back in people's faces. And so we really look at our spiritual healing as, okay, how can we work with you on where you're at and continue that journey of what that looks like for you? And so they have the choice and the ability to say, okay, this is where I want to go. So we have, you know, the women are engaged in different ways with that. And we really take their lead as to where that goes for them. And then the third phase is kind of what's next for them. So the transition pieces, the whether it's employment or volunteering or going back to school, lots of women want to go back to school. And one part of our program is even helping them get their GED or get some of those education pieces. And so that whole chunk takes 2 to 3 months. We sit with them. Where are they going to live? Who are their support people? How are they going to make sure that they're budgeting? Who are they going to call if they need something? All of the pieces that might come together for that. And so that's a big chunk as well. To date, we are actually having somebody graduate in April, which is really exciting. And we've had one other graduate from program. And like I said, we only opened in November 2019. And the program is about a year long. So it's kind of personal based, case based, and we just work with the individuals as to kind of where they're at and discerning, okay, where are we going to go? We have one girl in program right now that for sure is going to be there for over a year, just based on her needs and where she's at and what she is needing. So we really work with them on a one-to-one basis. And the other piece that I was going to say is we still have some outreach pieces in Saskatoon, but obviously due to COVID, some of that has been just eliminated a little bit based on that. Actually, Tyla is one of our outreach workers and she is a part of your community here as well. But that's going into the different massage parlors, connecting with people who are working online, doing some stuff within women who are working on the street, that kind of stuff. So that still does exist, but not as much just due to COVID at this point. And then the last piece that we do is education. So going out and working with either service providers or community groups that are wanting to know more about the issue and what does this look like in Saskatchewan? Because it's not something that everybody wants to talk about or hear about. And so, yeah, it's just slowly, how do we slowly get our foot into those communities and begin to be able to share a little bit about this issue and what is happening. So I think I'll kind of wrap that up. I don't know if we have time for questions. But again, thank you guys so much for being a part of what we're doing and for just supporting the people in program. I will say one thing. I know one of the families that you guys supported at Christmas, she's a mom. She's a single mom with two kids. And she was, I don't know who bought it, but somebody bought a really beautiful drawing book, like a book that she could do sketches and that kind of stuff. And when she opened it, her smile just got so huge. And she said, man, how did they know this is exactly what I wanted? This is just, and it has been one of the most healing things for her, actually, to be able to just get out that sketchbook, be able to draw some things. She's incredible. And some of the things that have come out have just been really meaningful for her and on her journey. So it's little things like that. Thank you guys for doing that, because it has made significant difference in her actual healing and growth as well.
Thank you. You speak to these issues really clearly, Jolene. Thank you for being willing to sit with us and educate us and help us. Just really appreciate mm-hmm. that. And just see, I know we could keep talking with you, but it is getting a little, the time is moving on.
Yes.
Just really, it's really encouraging to see how God has just been leading you and directing you and this organization. And so we want to certainly continue to pray for you. And I think what you've done here this morning has helped us gain a little bit more insight into what's happening, and you've educated us. So that's been really, really